I have
current geek.
Hello, dear listeners, and welcome back to Current Geek. This is Current Geek. We talk about items of interest to you, geeks of the world. You know who you are. I'm Scott Johnson. He's Tom Merritt. Hi, Tom.
Who am I?
You're Tom Merritt. What did I say? Tom?
I call this meeting to order. Yeah. Reminder, folks, we have that big news we mentioned last week. We're overhauling Current Geek.
Yep.
So we only have a couple more episodes of Current Geek left to go.
Yep.
Until we take a pause and bring back an even better Current Geek.
That's right. The beast,
as
you know it.
Might not even be called Current Geek.
Yeah, we don't know.
Might call it Jane.
It could be it could be Jane. It could be Bill. I don't know. Yeah. It could be
could
anything.
Be Sylvan Blooms. No idea. No idea, but it's going to be cool.
Yeah,
it's be
some, awesome. Some of those are harder to market, but easier to rhyme. So we'll see.
Right. We do need to workshop.
Yeah, we're thinking about all these things so you don't have to at home. But
the idea is to get these geeky topics and spend some time, higher production value, all that. We explained it all at the beginning of last show. If you didn't hear that, go back and listen to that. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, here we are.
Yeah, here we are. We're going to do something a little bit different today. So we do a thing that normally I play this for. Okay. Oh, there's more. All right. Forgot that. It goes like twice as long. And it's usually the part of the show where we get to, hey, what's the best thing of all time this week? And given our current circumstance with the all the shutdowns, lockdowns, the pandemic that is happening, and everybody trying to do their bit, Tom and I thought, and I have to give mostly credit to Tom, he had the great idea of discussing the kinds of things that are the greatest thing of all time this week indoors, meaning we're all stuck doing it. We're all nerds. We have our nerd needs. And so we have some categories and some picks and some discussion as to why we think they would be good for you.
Now, we'd love to hear yours, too, because we don't have any tabletop games in here. And I know tabletop games, man, this is a good time, unless you're alone. But if you have family members to play with, tabletop games would be a really good one.
Yeah. Another.
All of mine are video or TV, movies, books, etc.
Sure. Mine are mostly video games, TV, movies, a couple of guilty pleasures, which I'm excited to talk about those in those categories.
And I will determine if you are guilty.
That's right. And I'm actually excited because
pleasure.
Tom, as people know, Tom's not only a great purveyor of great book recommendations, given Sword and Laser and that sort of thing, but you're also an author of your own self. And I'm excited today to hear some of those recommendations because I realized as we were doing our notes today, I have been woefully short on trying to read a book during all this. And that would usually be a go-to for me. I love getting into some fantasy, big thick fantasy or science fiction novel. And I just straight up have not done it. So today's episode will maybe spark that a few of us out there that are now trying to figure out a way to rest your head a little. You know, there's a lot to worry about during the day. You got to deal with certain things that have made life weird. But when you sit down and grab a book, what are you going to read? We'll talk about all that.
A couple of notes before we get into the stuff. There are a lot of good things you can do to help the world. Donate to the Red Cross, donate blood, look for legitimate folks in your area that are helping out health professionals because this is a really, really tough time and it's only going to get tougher in most places. That said, you shouldn't be driving yourself crazy reading about all of this all the time. Take a break from the news. It's smart to stay well informed. It's not such a great idea to be so over-informed that you're just driving your anxiety through the roof. So I think while these may sound kind of frivolous and silly, if fun recommendations, these are important things for you to do. Find some stuff to take a break, let your mind rest, distract yourself. It's not irresponsible if you're still staying informed and still doing other things, it's responsible to take a break to refresh your brain.
I agree. We had a big discussion with my sister today on my other show. She's as some people may know, she's a psychologist, a practicing one, and knows a lot about mental health. And she would agree. You need to not feel guilty that woe is me. I need to play a video game or a book to de-stress a little bit. Don't feel guilty about that. Like ever this feeling you're all feeling is a little bit of collective grief. And though some have it worse, some have it better, some we don't even know how they have it. It is okay to, and I hate, you know, the term self-care is a little overused, but it's okay to practice it. And some of this stuff is absolutely me and Tom's jam. Probably a lot of you will use this stuff as well.
That Wendy, man, she's so smart.
She's great. She's very good.
Listen to her. Yeah. You lucked out in the sister.
You're not kidding. I know your sister's pretty rad too, but.
Yeah, my sister's not bad. I like my sister quite a bit too.
I was such a dork growing up, and she was always the one that just had the level head and the smart ideas. And now it's even better than ever. But even she even admitted, she's like, man, I've got four kids at home. They're not in school. I got to deal with that. Their mental health, their physical health, now their school health, like, I have to do all of that. Plus, she's super active in the neighborhood and in the community, trying to help other people with their stuff. She's got her own stuff to worry about, financial issues, everything else that just comes with this for everybody. And she said to us today, she goes, even I had to stop and go, I have to take care of me a little bit. I have to.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, it sounds like it's super important to do that with all of that.
Yeah, and it's even, you know, the comparison we used today, I thought it was a dumb analogy when I said it, but she said it actually works. So I was happy to hear my dumb idea validated. But I said, is this like when you're on a plane and the oxygen masks drop and they always tell you to do yours first and then help everyone around you? And she said, that is exactly it. She said, she goes, you've got to take care of your stuff so that you
that
can be more helpful.
That is not dumb at all, my friend. That is a principle of being a first responder that they teach you, which is if you're not safe, you can't help others.
Right.
It sounds selfish, but the first thing you do as a first responder is ensure that you're in a safe situation.
Right.
You know, movies and TV shows are great at showing the daring hero who risked the burning building. And it's like, yeah, but if you die of smoke inhalation, for real, you don't help anybody. So that principle of fix your own mask first is an important one because you can't help other people if you're passed out.
That's right. And she, you know, help me have one of my first analogies that actually functioned as a proper analogy in the morning. And that was great. Usually on that show, I am full of the dumbest analogies sometimes.
Big day for you.
But this one worked out. Yeah, thank you very much. It's all part of my healing process. So anyway, let's dive in. Let's get into these. We kind of have some categories here. Let me bang out the video game stuff first, because if there's anything I've escaped into the most, it's been these things. And in particular, right in the thrust of all this, the comparison I keep hearing from people use, and I've used a couple of times on shows, is that we're between the lightning and the thunder right now, which is that weird moment of like, when are we going to hear it? What do we know? We don't know anything.
Everybody ran to the grocery store, stocked up on their toilet paper, sheltered in place, and now they're waiting.
Yes, they're waiting. And in that waiting, it just so happened that two games that were, I don't know if Doom Eternal was delayed or not, but certainly Animal Crossing was already delayed. It was supposed to come out last year, and they pushed it to March. And at the time of the delay, everybody was just like, oh, well, I guess I'll wait till March. Little did they know that one of the most cathartic video games of all time was gonna happen. I know your wife's been playing. I've seen her online.
I was just playing right before the show.
Oh, actually. Very nice.
I don't have as much time to play, and so when there is time, I always defer to her because she's made a lovely island. And of course, people may not know, but you go to a deserted island in the game, and if you have a Switch, that is the island for everybody who plays that Switch. Yep. So it's her island. I just live in it.
You just live in her island. It's like life for you, really. It's you just live in an island's island.
That's true.
But it's I say that it's the same with me and Kim. But anyway, so. I really like that game, and I've loved the series from the beginning, but there was something about it in particular here that was a needed escape. There's a thing about Nintendo. There's things about the way they make their games and craft them that make them feel like a home and a place that you want to be and visit, and the gameplay loops in them are simple but deep, and you just can get lost in them. And so I would just say to some of the hardcore nerds out there, and you're listening to this thinking, well, I don't know, Animal Crossing looked like it was always for... you know, kids.
Cutesy little animals. That's not for me.
And it is cute, sure. But let it get into your bloodstream just a little bit. And it's also really funny and sardonic. And there are moments of, there are moments of like real laughter at what dialogue they chose to put in this game. And that's a lot of that is clearly aimed at not little kids. I don't mean that it's salacious or anything, but there are,
No, it's not rated R.
But when I got my first black bass, for example, I pulled it out of the water and he goes, black bass, the most metal of fish. And I'm like, you're not, that's not for some 5-year old. That's for me to understand.
Why is it metal, Dad? Yeah, no.
So it's very cool and very good. And you can spend a lot of time in there. One other aspect of this I mentioned on your tech show on Wednesday that has been really nice, although I don't know if you look at the numbers, it's kind of an expensive nice, and it's not really what I wish Nintendo would have made people do. I wish it was a little bit easier to share the game or, you know, have your own island while Eileen has her island, that sort of stuff. They really lock that stuff down.
I try to be a good citizen, but it would be safer if I just, you know, had my own island where if I break a rock or dig up a bunch of potholes,
yeah,
I don't have to worry about
exactly.
it.
Exactly. But I've been able to play this with my kids. And for those who don't know, my kids, I have 3 of them, and 2 of them just recently moved out and into their own apartments in the last couple of months. And that was already a big, weird transition. But now with this lockdown happening, it's even weirder because we're just used to having them with us.
Yeah.
Anyway, to make a long story short, all 3 of my kids have and are huge fans of the series. I sort of raised them on Animal Crossing. Every console they played here in the house
had
it on there. So every night, most nights, we get in. And we get on, you know, Discord or something, do voice, and we talk while we run around to each other's islands, finds out somebody's selling turnips for more money on their island than my island. So we port over there and we get whatever fruit they have we don't have and check the store to see if there's stuff that they have that we don't get at our store yet. And it is so much fun. And it's just ridiculous what you're doing, but it has been maybe one of my favorite respites from all this chaos. So big thumbs up.
I don't want to overemphasize this, but there is something to the fantasy element of it where you get to hang out with people.
Mm-hmm.
You get to leave your house and walk around and talk to people. And granted, they're just little animals and everything, but there is something a little cathartic about the normality of it all.
Oh, yeah.
There's no panic buying at Nook's little store. everything's in stock for the most part. It's a wonderful break.
Yeah. In some ways it's a weird, it's like they live on the gig economy in this game. Because everything you do is like, deliver me 8 of these and I'll give you this.
Yeah.
Take these over there, and every one of those you take over there, you get a little bit of this. Like it's a weird analogy to the gig economy. But
Eileen and her sister both bought masks. You can buy the face masks.
Oh, right. Yeah. It's very popular in there. Everybody,
just walking around with her masks on on their islands.
Well, you know, together apart or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's awesome and available for only the Switch. This is a Nintendo exclusive property. It is, if there's one downside to it, it has made a massive run on both Switches and copies of the game if you were hoping to get it physically. Switches in particular are just, you can't find them.
They're just gone. They sold out real quick.
Yeah.
And you can download it. I understand there might be reasons like storage wise or whatever, or you just don't trust it. But if you can't get a physical copy of the game, you can still buy the game and play it.
Absolutely. That's what I did anyway. I always go digital when I can.
Yeah, that's what we did.
It has a couple of downsides. You can't share a cartridge with somebody,
right,
which normally you could, because again, it's tied to the system. But all that being said, if you've got friends, they've got a copy, you have a copy. If you're in the same room, it's even better because you don't have load times and other stuff. But it's just a fun escape, and I would give it a big fat 9 out of 10 for me. It's very, very good and true to the series and a great escape. So if you have a Switch and can get it, and also be really careful with your Switch, because Nintendo this week temporarily closed their repair centers in
repair shops.
US.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So there is no calling them and going, oh, my left stick fell off.
Well, good luck with that.
Yeah, I guess unless you send it to Japan, I don't know, even Japan. I'm sure Japan's not going to do anything, so you're kind of stuck. So be careful. Then the other flip side of all of this, the other side of this weird coin of gaming this week was Doom Eternal, which is a follow-up to the 2016 Doom, which was a bit of a reimagining of the old 20-plus-year-old series.
Yeah, if you don't want walking around talking to cute animals, how about shooting things?
Yeah, you
want to
shoot demons and tear their heads off and then move on to the next demon and pull his eyeball out and shove it down his throat, that sort of stuff.
Sometimes that is also cathartic.
It can be. And I can confirm that it actually is. That's a very good game. That game's, it's a bit of a ballet. I would also say it's a very violent, ridiculous ballet, but a ballet nonetheless. It's got interesting
Doom
rhythm.
What do you expect?
Yeah, it's Doom. It's, you know what you're going to get into. The 2016 game was lauded by fans and critics alike, and this is a great follow-up to that. So I would just say, if shooting action sounds like a lot of fun to you, it's hard to find anything better than that. And then the third tier of this would be the release of Half-Life Alyx, which in some ways is the most recently announced to release game of this list. Well, it literally is. They announced this not very long ago, to much surprise. Everybody was like, whoa, they're doing what? I mean, we'd heard rumors, but we didn't know they were making a proper Half-Life game in VR only. And the reason I bring this one up, because I haven't actually played it yet. I've watched a lot of video. Tom hasn't played it. It is, by all accounts, the real deal. And by real deal, I mean that dusty headset you picked up from, you know, Oculus or HTC or whatever you've got or even don't have yet. You may have thought, well, I'm never going to see a true game on VR that's worth my $40 that really goes deep and lets me play for many hours and is that satisfying. It appears they have done it, and they did it with a beloved franchise, and I have yet to talk to anybody who wasn't blown away by this game. It's currently enjoying an overwhelmingly positive review on Steam, which is, again, rare. And it's coming to all VR platforms. If it isn't already on your platform, it's coming. The Oculus Quest is getting its own native version. You can also play that with the Quest with the cable now on PC if you want. And it is coming to PlayStation VR and some of the mixed reality headsets that you see out in the market as well. It's coming to those. So expect this to be a giant hit. And if you want to escape into a fully 360 degree, I want to live in a totally virtual world for a while and don't mind being a little, you know, jump scared here and there, Half-Life Alyx might be your jam.
Those are the video games, folks.
Yeah.
The only video games. No, those are a few of the video games that might take you out of this. There are of course tons of them.
Yep.
But we just kind of mentioned stuff that's either caught our eye or we're enjoying. The first TV show we want to talk about, though, is not one I enjoy. It's
yeah.
real hot right now. I sampled one episode and I was like, not for me, but man, people love this thing, Scott. Yeah. It's got 100% rating on Rotten Tomatoes. It's The Tiger King.
Yeah, I watched the entirety of it. It's a complete train wreck. If you want to watch very unlikable people do very unlikable things, it is so going to be your jam. Like, I have to, so I'll admit, I find things like, you remember Cops, when Cops was on or in its prime, I guess it's still on, but that Cops reality show would come on and I would sit down and go, all right, I'm in, because I would love that show. Why? Because it would show me or remind me that I'm doing okay. You know, I had this cathartic thing where I would look at it and go, oh, there's a half naked guy on the hood of a car spraying beer all over the cop who's trying to arrest him and he's high on crack. That is a horrible thing. And I don't want to ever be around that. And I feel bad for the people involved and all of that. But in the end, it's like, oh, no, I'm doing all right with my life. Like, I'm not
on the hood of anybody's car, naked or otherwise.
I had a bad week at work, but you know what? It's okay, because look at this. And so this is a little like that. And they tell a story, and it gets so twisty. Like, there's so much more down the road in this series. About episode 5 or so, it's just like, what is this really possible? What's happening? It's just crazy. But to give you the very bare nuts and bolts of it, there's a pretty large number of I wouldn't call them domesticated, but there are people who own large cats, tigers, lynx, cougars, that sort of stuff, in this country, more than are in the wild. Like in the case of tigers, Bengal tigers, there's something like 10,000 owners of tigers in the country and only 4,000 in their wild areas, which is kind of crazy. And this thing is all about the culture and people behind private zoos, private owners, and otherwise people who buy these big cats and keep them in captivity. And you would think, oh no, is this some kind of PETA loving whatever? No. I mean, you can gather some of that from it, but it's less about the animals and a lot more about some really, really weird folks. And so if you're into it, Tom, I'm telling you, it is the greatest train wreck on TV at the moment. But I totally get why you saw it and went, nope.
I watched one episode, like I said. My wife's going to keep watching them, mostly because she has to for her job, because the only thing Rotten Tomatoes has to talk about right now are TV shows.
Right.
And this is a hot one that everybody's talking about, and the critics love it. My thing about it, in case this helps somebody who's like, oh yeah, I wouldn't like that. I just don't like this documentary style that sort of, to me, exploits fringe characters to make them look bad. It just bothers me.
Yeah.
And I get what you're talking about, which is like, yeah, but I see this craziness and it makes me feel better that things aren't as crazy for me. And I think that's totally legit.
Right.
Like, I don't think that's bad, but I just can't see past the fact that, yeah, this guy's weird, but they're making him weirder. It feels like someone from the outside coming in and going, let's go look at the freak show, shall we?
Yeah.
Rather than somebody kind of trying to understand.
I totally get that. And I think you're actually really onto something. And I think a lot of these documentaries fall into that category where this changed for me. And again, it's, you know, first episode matters because that's your impression, right? That's how you get in. And if it doesn't hook you then, like, where are you going to get it? But this thing goes into places where it feels like they showed up to cover the freak show and stayed for what really ended up happening. And that's where I think people are hooked on it. I don't think it's so much that, hey, he's weird and how weird is he? Well, let's go find out. I think it has a bit of that, especially up front. Later down the road, though, stuff gets super real and you're like, oh, man, the money and the stuff that went on behind the scenes and those secret recordings that we didn't see and like a lot of stuff just really blew my mind. So I'm going to totally agree with you. And if this was just 7 episodes of them going, look how weird these people are, I would not have been into this. But like McMillions, which just came out on HBO, and I also watched, it was fantastic. It's a lot like that. At first, you think you're just getting into something kind of basic and surfacey. And before you know it, you are in the weeds and it's just nutty. So,
and the other thing that about it, which is not a criticism, is it's very much a true crime story in a way.
Oh yeah.
And that's not a genre I terribly love. That's just personal taste though. So if you're into true crime, this is one of the weirdest true crime stories that I've seen come out of the woodwork.
Yeah.
Like it's certainly a unique take on the true crime telling.
If you're worried there's not enough true crime, as you get to the end, literally someone ends up in jail for 22 years. So it's like a big crime happens, but you know, you're going to wade through some freak show to get there. And I couldn't pull away, but that's why we've caveated this to say, some of you are going to be like me and be like, I got to watch this craziness. And some of you are going to be like Tom and go, there's enough craziness. I'm good. And that is totally cool. Not a problem. But you're going to feel pressure. You're going to get that, you know, Twitter pressure. Everybody's saying, oh, Tiger King, you got to watch it. Just know it's not for everybody. It's okay if it's not for you, I would say.
And it's okay if it is for you.
Yeah.
Too.
Not a problem.
Let's talk about some other good watches. Are you watching Better Call Saul?
I am, religiously. Oh, so good. It is so good. Tom, it's so good. It's like.
I know. It's not better than Breaking Bad, but in its later seasons, it's getting closer and closer to being like Breaking Bad without feeling like a pale imitation. And yet it is focused on telling the story of Saul Goodman, Jimmy McGill.
Yep.
And to the point where I really feel like they did a great job of, in the early seasons, I was like, well, I guess it's smart for them to distance it from Breaking Bad. Let's keep it different. But I'm not sure if I love this story, but it's a good story. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh yeah, no, the reason, that's like when you look at your first grade picture and you're like, oh yeah, I was a lot different and a little more boring back then. I got real interesting in sixth grade though. Mm-hmm. Like we're at sixth grade in that analogy. Like we are now at the point where you are seeing characters from Breaking Bad showing up. You're getting some of their backstory and how they ended up being the people they were in Breaking Bad. And yet if you didn't know anything about Breaking Bad, you would still enjoy this story because it's just the story of how events, circumstances, and social pressures caused Jimmy McGill, who wanted to be a lawyer like his brother, instead turns out to be a lawyer like Saul Goodman. In fact, he is Saul Goodman. And I look forward to sitting down and soaking in each episode.
I do too, in a way that I haven't felt about a show in a while. For me, this is right up there with my favorite things on TV ever. Those things include the Fargo TV reimagining and, of course, Breaking Bad. It's just so... They did this one thing that I have to at least mention that I think is so hard, and then somehow they pulled it off. Right now, and for the last probably 3.5 seasons, the show has slowly started to become, I think intentionally, but become a two-track story. And mm-hmm. the two tracks are pretty clear. It's Jimmy McGill slash Saul Goodman's stuff and Kim Wexler and all that on this side. And on this other side, you've got Mike Ehrmantraut and you've got Gus Fring and you've got all these people that you may, if these names don't sound familiar, you haven't seen Breaking Bad, but all of that other stuff, Nacho and those guys, all running a kind of a concurrent story. And once in a while, there's a little crossover, zip, 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 where some of them, one of them meets another one, or Saul has to go talk to Nacho about something or whatever it is. But you haven't had the full merging of the traffic yet. And they've kept them separate. What's amazing about it to me is that it should be, when they're talking about the kind of lawyery, cheatery stuff going on the Saul Goodman side, or the kind of dark underworld drug assassination business happening on the other side, you would think you'd get there and go, well, I sure hope this episode's about the one half, not the other. Or I sure hope this scene hurries up and ends so I can get back to the one I liked more. Instead, they are both so compelling that the minute one switches over, I go, okay, we're back over here now. Okay, cool. Okay.
Ooh, what's then, going ooh, on with Nacho?
Ooh, and then how back over here, what happened? What did Jimmy McGill do? Like, it. I can't name another show that has successfully pulled that off. That's usually it's a very much a B story somewhere in some story, but this has figured out how to make two A stories coexist. And yeah. It's so good. I love it. Every bit of it. I just absolutely love it. Season 4 was amazing. 5 so far is amazing.
I
kind of want to
just stop right now and finish. I got partway through the episode. I haven't finished this week's episode just because I've been so darn busy.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to stop doing the show and go watch it, but I have that impulse. It's that good. We're like, God, I just gotta go finish it.
It's hard not to. It's so good. And every time a new episode comes out, I just cannot wait to consume it. And I just, again, this is one of those things where it's like, this is not gonna be for everyone. One of the things Breaking Bad did well, and this does even better in my opinion, is create just some of the most tense and interesting character plays in any television show. And if you don't like that, if you don't like, I don't know, people just pulling things over on each other and just seeing the slow slip of, well, literally people breaking bad, then this may not be for you. And you probably already know that because you dipped your toe in and said, nope, not for me. My wife does not like Breaking Bad. It makes her feel like it's just, she doesn't like all these people in these horrible situations. Mm-hmm. And so I totally get that. But man, if you want like really intricate character interaction and stuff, I don't know if there's anything better right now. It's just that good. It's very, very good. Better Call Saul.
You should tell her there's a Lifetime movie based on Breaking Bad coming called Fringing in the Holidays.
Perfect. Starring Aaron Paul. A couple of the old cast members get in there and yeah, really
Gustavo,
rip him. Yeah, that'd Fring. Be amazing. Oh, Fring is so good this season.
Yeah,
oh.
I know.
And you know what? That's the other thing. One other thing I wanted to say. They made a prequel series that works. Like,
that's a tough one.
Why does this work? And they brought back all these characters that everyone loved from Breaking Bad, or loved to hate at the least, and now they're here again, and it doesn't feel like they've skipped a beat. It doesn't feel wrong or forced or anything. It just feels like they're filling in stuff we would have never known, but telling brand new stories in and around that stuff, and it's just freaking so good. Anyway, you heard us go on and on about Jonathan Banks the other day when we did our episode about
yeah, that's right,
the wise guy thing, and there's a reason that dude is just killing it on here. Oh yeah, so good. So anyway, good. All right, I can talk about that show.
Are you watching The Magicians?
No, so I'm excited to hear about you telling. This is a book based on books, right? And been around for a while.
TV show definitely stands on its own. It departs from the books fairly early in its run. This is its final season, its fifth season. And the first two seasons hew pretty close to the book. Third really starts to depart. And after that, it's just new story. So at this point, I've just learned to love these versions of the characters. And I'm no longer thinking about, yeah, well, but would Margot? Oh, wait, there is no Margot. She's Janet in the book. Like, they rename some characters and stuff like that. Right. It's just delightful. The premise is, there is a graduate school for magicians. And the reason it's graduate school is they want to show people doing things that they would normally do in undergraduate, but they didn't want to show them at that age on screen doing them. So a lot of drinking, a lot of, you know, dating, sex, et cetera.
Sure.
But these are kids in their 20s who are going to this graduate school for magic. And there is also in this world an analogous set of novels to the Narnia series in our world, but they're called Fillory and Further, and they're by a different author. It's not by C.S. Lewis. I don't think the author is meant to be C.S. Lewis. And yet it plays in to the plot because they find out how to use magic to travel to Fillory. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of this warped Narnia situation where these, like, you know, hard drinking, partying magic student kids show up and become the High Kings of Fillory. So there's some pretty great, you know, comedy there. Yeah. And then it's just about a world in which, you know, magic exists and is hidden from the rest of the people, and how these kids navigate their relationships and challenges and try to save magic. And they're just really well-developed characters. If you want great characters, this is the show for you.
Would you say that it's like, hey, what if all the Harry Potter kids grew up and now this is what the world's like in a modern context.
No, I wouldn't. Okay. I think that's a totally fair. I'm glad you asked that question because I know a lot of people would jump to, like, oh, so it's like Harry Potter graduate school. Got it. No, it's not. This is not a nice thing at all. There's a lot of if you like the tone of Better Call Saul and Breaking Bad, you'll like The Magicians. There's a lot of that to it. This is not a clean, happy, there are no Dumbledores, put it that way.
Wow. Yeah, that's interesting because for good or for ill, I think the general public think that anything that's about magic, in this kind of magic, they think of the Harry Potter model, and so my question was a little bit loaded because I wondered if the show tries to appeal to that, which is a lot of adults who love the Harry Potter world, but it sounds like it's its own thing, and that's
good. They do. It's sort of the, like, wink, we know you loved Harry Potter when you were a kid, but now that you're in your 20s, wouldn't you like to hang out with magicians that are more like you are now?
Yeah.
Here you go.
Yeah. That's interesting. I'll have to watch it. This is one that Kim and I have frequently said, oh, hey, The Magicians, we should watch that. Oh yeah, I heard it was great. And then we forget. And
I wonder if Kim would like it or not. Because it's not about people being bad. It's not about, you know, like, people becoming horrible. Mm-hmm. But there are also no purely good characters. Like, everybody's got a flaw.
I think she'd be all right with that. I think
I think
where I lost her in Breaking Bad is when they put the body in the tub and tried to dissolve it. That's where she went. Right. All right.
Yeah,
I'm out.
Magicians is it's primetime Sci-Fi Network. So there's,
yeah,
there's
she'll
no
probably like it a lot. Like, she loves The Expanse, for example. Thinks that's an amazing show. And talk
I
about
always The Expanse and The Magicians launched at the same time on Sci-Fi Network. I always kind of pair them up in my head because I loved both books that they were based on. Mm-hmm. But The Magicians kept going after The Expanse got kicked over to Amazon, so they're no longer together anymore.
Oh, it's too bad. The breakup I never knew I was sad about. All right. Excellent. Now, the next one on your list is Westworld, which is queued up for me, but I haven't started the season yet. I have to admit, I went in with some concerns. They're out of the park, right? They're in the city and it's weird, different.
It's only two, like you say, only two episodes in. So far, I'm really, really pleased with where they're going with it. It's a departure from the previous seasons. Not only in that we get to experience the outside world, but even when we go back to Westworld, we don't go back in the same way that you did in the previous seasons. And I can't explain too much more without spoiling it, but anybody who doesn't know, Westworld is based on the movie, which is based on the book by Michael Crichton, which is about an amusement park with human AI-driven robots that look and act human, but it allows the patrons, the actual humans, to fulfill their fantasies of the Old West in Westworld.
Right.
So you can have gunfights and all the things with no repercussions, right? But there are repercussions, and that's where the story takes off from there. Season three is, there have been repercussions at the amusement park. It's shut down for the moment, and some of the semi-intelligent, or are they just intelligent, robots from the park have gotten out.
Oh, geez. Yeah. So I was pretty connected to the show all the way through one and two, and had high hopes for this. I was a little concerned when I heard about, you know, the change of premise, not premise, but, you know, having it move out of
the
park.
Well, it's actually just carrying on from the end of season two to be like, okay, they got out. What do they do?
Exactly. So here's my question for you from a tonal standpoint. Do I get any kind of like Blade Runner vibes out of this? What kind of future is this? Like, is it a...
It's a near future than Blade Runner, but there are definitely some great touches in the, because the first episode is the one where it really introduces you to what the world outside of the amusement park is. Mm-hmm. Aaron Paul is your entree into that. So, hey,
Jesse,
like Breaking Bad,
Jesse.
You might like Aaron Paul in Westworld.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
And there's some great stuff. Like there's some great touches to a really deeply thought about world outside of what's important for the main storyline. One thing, it's a minor spoiler, but for instance, there is a system where you can get jobs that are criminal through this dark net social network thing. Mm-hmm. And it's just so well done.
Mm.
Like the way it has its launch screen and its attitude and the way it's written, like it's got lots of like sort of that nasty internet personality to it. Like, you know, for the dialogue box, if you want to accept a job is like, yeah, let's get paid, or no, I want to stay broke.
Those ones that try to make you feel guilty. I freaking hate those things. Yeah. That sounds good. That seems like a good word on the street. And I've heard it from others too, who were pleasantly surprised. They may have gone in feeling like season two was a little on the weak side. I don't necessarily disagree, although I was kind of in for the duration because this is just my jam.
Yeah, I think this is getting better now.
All right. Westworld, it's HBO. Yeah,
we're not going to have so many. You know, like Fargo's got put off because they hadn't finished producing the whole season. Mm-hmm. There are definitely things we're not going to get. Westworld, you're getting the whole season, and you can get in on the early part of it right
That's
now.
That's true.
Or production's you can catch done. Up with HBO now.
I wonder how many. That might be an interesting exercise to find out what big anticipated, especially geeky stuff, had been in the pipe that are now delayed for production reasons. And
apparently a lot of animation stuff is still happening because you can more easily do that remotely.
Yeah.
But yeah, anything that was actually in production, that's getting delayed. They haven't issued a lot of new dates. Fargo is one of the few ones that they actually said, well, we'd already set a date, but we still had two episodes to shoot when we said that, and we can't shoot those episodes now. Yeah. So,
well, I hope I hope this all ends so that, not that this is the best reason, but one of the nice little side effects will be, I finally get Fargo season 4. That'd be great.
Yeah.
Because I love Fargo so much. All right.
I want to mention comfort watches. These are ones where it's like, I'm not getting something new and dark and gritty. I just want something enjoyable. Of the many autopilot shows that we have watched on Current Geek over the last several years, mm-hmm. Cheers is the one that I have kept watching.
That's so great. Like,
even The Sopranos, I kind of fell off and I got to get back to, as good as it is. And it's amazing. I keep watching Cheers. And I think the reason is it's just so comfy.
Mm-hmm.
It's got just enough good story to keep me from getting bored. It's dated, but it feels dated as a period piece, not dated. Like The Simpsons kind of feels more dated than Cheers, weirdly.
Sure.
Even though they're about from the same period, because mm-hmm. The Simpsons is trying to make a current joke that is no longer current.
Right.
Whereas Cheers is just capturing a moment in time. Right. So I'm like, oh yeah, no, this is what the 80s was like.
Yeah.
And especially now that we can't go to restaurants and bars, it's really nice to just hang out at your favorite bar with mm-hmm. your friends, Norm mm-hmm. and Diane and Sam and Woody.
Yeah. There's a real comfortable home quality to those characters. And you just sort of want to be with them, and I'm with you on this. The Cheers is on a lot in my household before this and now. So a lot of times I'll fall asleep to the show because I just like being there. I don't skip the theme song. I just like where it takes me. And I know part of that is just that, you know, when we grew up, when the age you and I were, when that show was on the air, we have particular fondness for it. And
yeah, that's a big part of it. You're right.
Yeah. So I really, really like it. I'm glad you picked that one. I would say another comfort watch I didn't know I needed, but now that I'm there, I really am enjoying it. My wife and I are watching a lot of Dharma and Greg on Hulu.
And really?
This is a 90s ass freaking, you know, sitcom that, you know, did okay in its day. There were Golden Globes and she won a couple being on that show. I forgot her name. Anyway, forgot her name. Anyway, whoever played Dharma. It's this story about an attorney with a very uptight past and family, but very well to do, ends up marrying a total hippie girl, and their side of the family is all just hippies and tree huggers and whatever the stereotypes of the 90s were. And it's their life together and their life with their families. And I'm surprised how much I'm laughing at it. Maybe it's because we're all locked in during a pandemic and it doesn't matter what you give me. But I think part of it is just good hearted, silly sitcom fun. And there are some genuine laughs to be had in there. Also a lot of guest stars. I don't remember being on that thing. Like Penn and Teller were on there and a whole bunch of famous people showed up on that show.
Jenna Elfman.
Yeah. Jenna Elfman. There you go. Thank you. It's just weirdly delightful, and it's kind of, I mean, it's 90s and it feels 90s, and it's definitely not Cheers. It's a very different kind of watch, but it's giving me similar feelings of like, oh, remember when we first got married and this show was still on and we watched this.
Well, it's a free-spirited yoga instructor just like Kim finding true love and a conservative lawyer just like you. No
just
wonder
like
you're
me. Yeah, no, exactly. This is like ripped from our life. And, but it's just great. It's just a dumb, fun, easy watch. You know, it's very much of the Seinfeld slash, you know, Will and Grace kind of era. And I actually think it holds up.
I think there's a little bit of bipartisanship to this story, too, that probably you find comforting.
Yeah, there's something about that. Yeah, and you know what? I hadn't thought of that until you just now said it. But I think there is something to that. There's something about, look how different we are, but we're making this work.
Yeah,
I think that's actually a thing. It did not enter my brain until you said it, but now all sorts of truth lights are flashing off in my head.
Well, the whole tagline here is that he needs Dharma for her optimism, mm-hmm. and she needs him for his stability.
Yep.
And it's like, yeah, that's true of the country too.
Yeah, it turns out we all could use a little of that. And for whatever reason, this lighthearted treatment of it is working for me. So I'm in. Now, my favorite thing ever is this next thing, because I need to know what you're doing. So tell me about this. I'm going to let you explain the entirety of this.
So Major League Baseball was supposed to open today as we record this, March 26th. And they did a pretty cool thing, because nobody could watch their favorite team on opening day this year because they're not playing the games. They ran on the MLB Network, on ESPN, on MLB.TV, baseball games that of the greatest baseball games in history. And so especially if you were able to access it online, every team got a game in which they won. Wow. So the 30 baseball teams, there were 30 games. Usually on opening day, there'd only be 15 games, right? Because the teams are playing each other. But there were 30 games, and there was one for every team in which that team won. So you could watch your team win on opening day. And in addition to that, both the MLB and MLB Vault YouTube channels have a bunch of classic games from history that you can watch. So the other night, I mentioned this on Cord Killers too, I popped on what is labeled as the 1978 Tom Seaver no-hitter. Tom Seaver was one of my favorites growing up when he was with the Mets. I would read the Tom Seaver biography from the children's section of our city library over and over and over. To the point where they told me I could no longer count it for my summer reading program after the eighth time I read it. They're like, you have to read other things.
I love that.
I was like, no, I'm really reading it every time. It's great.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, I'll watch this, because it's when he was with the Cincinnati Reds against the Cardinals, my team growing up,
yeah.
And still my team. And so I watched it and I was like, oh my gosh, my team's about to get no hit, but he's getting no hit by one of the best pitchers in baseball ever. And it was all the players I watched growing up when I would go to the stadium. So we would get free tickets every year. They were called A+ student tickets.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have to get A+, but if you got a certain number of A's, you would get free tickets to see a Cardinals game. And we would go every year, and then we'd sometimes go for other games as well. But we would watch the Cardinals, and these were the Cardinals I watched when I was 8 years old in 1978.
Wow.
So that was just a treat to be like, oh, there's Ken Reitz, there's Gary Templeton. These are not household names. These are not names that anyone else, even Cardinal fans, in a lot of cases, talk about. But you know, there they were. Jerry Mumphrey, he's out there. Oh my gosh. And I knew all of these names as a kid. So that was just a treat. That was super fun to actually get some baseball, even though there isn't any right now, and have it enjoy it. So if you're into baseball, and there's lots of others, you can find hockey games on there too. NHL has some classic games available. That's something that's comforting to me anyway.
I love that. I used to do this a little bit with basketball games back in the day, and I don't know why I did it, but I liked it. It's been a long time though since I've done that. It is funny though, because I'm in a bit of a baseball mood, and I'm rewatching the now up on pbs.org free for the third or fourth time now. I'm watching baseball again. So it's only bits and pieces so far, because I just started, but I've watched that thing three or four times through all 18 hours of it. It's like 9 innings, 18 hours, 2 hours per inning, plus the extra innings they did in 06 or whatever it was. That mostly dealt with the controversy over steroids and stuff. But anyway, this thing starts back like pre-Civil War and goes all the way up to, like I said, 06. And that's another way I get that feeling of baseball.
That's a really good one.
Yeah, I would really recommend that. And PB, what's his name? Ken Burns said, look, we're putting this up on the channel and making it free for everybody. So while you're stuck at home, here's 18 hours of content that you can go and watch. And it's very good. So if you've never seen the baseball documentary from Ken Burns, you're missing out. It is amazing. And in some ways, it's like, it is the history of America wrapped in baseball.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. So good. And then here's the other thing I've been doing. This is my weird guilty pleasure, and I think it's weirder, probably weirder than baseball games on YouTube. I'm a little jealous of your choice. Instead, what I've been doing is finding really old, out of copyright cartoon shorts from like the 20s and 30s.
Oh, like, that sounds great.
Ancient stuff, man. Like, just some of it's really bad prints. A lot of it's on archive.org because you can't get it anywhere else. Just weird 5-6 minutes, sometimes longer, short cartoons that were, some are even silent cartoons. They just had, they had no VO of any kind. Others had a little voiceover. There's an old Japanese cartoon that's sort of famous for being the first Japanese animated short that had voice. It's really odd. I found a Edgar Allan Poe House of Usher animation that is, I don't know where this thing came from. It was the weirdest thing I have seen in a very long time. That's the weirdest style. And man, I love that stuff. I just get into it and try to understand why all those guys had spaghetti legs and all the movement you used to do in these old cartoons, and why they were so fascinated with inanimate objects taking on life. And there's just so much cool history there to delve into. So I've been diving into that. I've been streaming some of that with fans on the Frog Pants Adventure Club, which is this random thing I do once in a while. And I'm just loving it. It's hard for me to make specific recommendations there because they're just all over the map, but you can find a lot of it on YouTube. You can find a lot of it on archive.org, like I mentioned. Just look for really old cartoons. In fact, that can be your search term.
Can you make a playlist of them?
I guess should do that.
On archive.
I should do
that. Or even
that.
Just a web page where you link out to some of the coolest. I want to watch.
I really should do that. In fact, you know what? I am going to do that, because some of these I'm finding randomly and going, oh my gosh, is this real? Like, how did this even get made? And it's not even that I'm finding like, oh, this one's racist or this one likes Nazis, or it's none of that. It's just, here's one, you know, well before the space program, and they're trying to be serious about space stuff, and you're like, whoa, how wrong were they? You know, that's already true of a lot of movies and stuff, but the cartoons, because of their limited, you know, what they can do, it just ends up sounding so nuts. Anyway, I'll get a list going and share that.
I want to watch those. That sounds great.
It's pretty awesome. Now, most people that crap, you know, plop down on a couch and go, hey, where's my favorite book? And for some reason, I haven't done that during this shutdown. So you tell me what I should be reading.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, what I would say is, if you're into science fiction and fantasy, just go to swordandlaser.com and find all our book picks. Because honestly, that's what I read for the most part. We just finished reading The Light Brigade by Cameron Hurley. We're about to start How to Lose the Time War by Amar El-Matar and Max Gladstone. We finished Before the Light Brigade, Gideon the Ninth. These are great books. The Light Brigade is kind of a modern Heinlein-ish, Starship Troopers-ish kind of story about a time-traveling warrior who is fighting this war out of order. She keeps getting sent on missions, and every time she shows up, she ends up in a different part of the timeline, and it's great. Gideon the Ninth is very like goth magic space travel story where the emperor is looking for something and it calls all of these leaders of the different planets together to like the ruins of the capital. Great stuff. Mm-hmm. But if you're sort of like, yeah, but I've read a lot. I've been reading a lot and I just want something, maybe a couple of things that are short. Mm-hmm. Where I cause I'm so distracted and I'm so out of focus these days that I can't really concentrate on a whole novel. I got two recommendations for you.
Great.
The first is Shakespeare.
Oh, wow. All right.
Short, compelling stories. Now, for some, the language may be a barrier. It's in English, of course, but it's, you know, in 16th, 15th century English. So it can be kind of hard to for some people to overcome, but it's a lot easier when you're reading it than listening to it, in my experience, because you can sort of see like, oh, this is, you know, we write it a little different, but I get where they're going. And the stories are timeless. Mm-hmm. And what a treat to start to go through and notice the quotes where you're like, oh, I didn't know that was from Shakespeare. Oh, I didn't know that characterization was, oh, they stole that from Shakespeare. I had no idea. So much of that, it's been mined for all of our popular culture. And they're plays, so you don't have to spend a lot of time investment on them, and you can always just go on to the next one.
That sounds awesome. I love Shakespeare, but usually I have to admit it's in some sort of visual form, or a play or a movie or whatever. Never really thought. It's so funny. I've never thought about just reading Shakespeare.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's,
and who has the time, right? Well, maybe
now. Right, and then you're not bothered. I mean, you make a good point about it maybe being an easier read because you're not bothered, but you're not distracted by, ooh, these amazing costumes or these incredible actors with crazy accents or this action or this whatever. Yeah. You can just do like any other book and build stuff out in your head. I really like that idea.
The other one is going to be a lot easier to language-wise. It's called From a Certain Point of View.
Okay.
It's a Star Wars anthology of short stories. And they're all by amazing authors, some of the best authors in science fiction, Nnedi Okorafor, Will Wheaton has a short story in here. And they take place within the Star Wars movies from the other point of view. So the one I'm reading right now, because I've just been slowly, this has been my airplane reading, to be honest, like when I'm just taking off and landing and I don't want to read something too long, I'll read these. And, I'm getting the story of TK421 and why he was not at his post.
Wow.
I mean, we kind of know why, but this is like expanding on that story. There was a great story, and I can't remember off the top of my head who wrote it now, but there was a great story about all of the different members of the cantina.
Oh, interesting.
And what brought them to the cantina that day.
Interesting. See, again, wouldn't have thought of this, but now I'm super interested. I'll read that.
Because it's all stories you know. You're like, oh, this is taking place on the Death Star, or this is taking place on Tatooine, or this is taking place at the Rebel base.
Mm-hmm.
It's all stuff where if you know Star Wars at all, you'll know immediately where it is, but it's stories that have never been told, like from the point of view of these secondary characters, and they're so well done.
It sounds great. I I love that once in a while you have to remember to do this. Because some books are just so classic and so ingrained in us, and we've heard a million stories that are like it or that have riffed on it, that you forget that stuff in and of itself is a really good read. Just because I haven't read a Tale of Two Cities in a long time doesn't mean it's still not an amazing book. Like, I need to do more of that. And what's great is a lot of that stuff is just straight up free in PDF or ebook formats. Like,
yeah, the Shakespearean stuff, you can find absolutely free EPUBs of that. It's public domain.
Yeah, and there's a lot of, I know there's some Audible content that went free this week. That's something to check out. And it's a lot of this classic stuff. Also, I forgot what the other ebook was. It may have been Amazon. Somebody's got a bunch of EPUB and other reader format available stuff that's free this week for the foreseeable future. So there are... Mr. Rogers says, look for the helpers. Some of those helpers are putting out some of this content that you can just get and read and listen to and check out yourselves. What about the one medium, Tom, that you and I work in the most, that being podcasting? I mean, we're not going to get into exact, sort of episodes.
Yeah.
Or whatever,
so we've talked about books. We talked about video games, talked about TV shows. There are other things that aren't in those categories, the podcast being one of them, that I just wanted to throw out there. I'm really enjoying podcasts in a different way. My routine hasn't changed that much, so I still listen to them on dog walks and stuff like that. But a lot of times in the afternoon between shows, like say between Daily Tech News Show and Current Geek, I might go out in the backyard, listen to some podcasts and run the dogs around. Well, these days my wife's home from working, so I'm more likely to talk to my wife while I run the dogs around or something like that. So I've been finding time to listen to podcasts, just sitting down and just lounging and almost never do that. I'm always on the move when I'm listening to them, but yeah, there's some great podcasts out there. If you want to keep abreast of everything that's happening in the United States on the political scene during COVID-19, Politics, Politics, Politics from Justin Robert Young is a great one. I also subscribe to the All Audio Economist podcast for keeping up to date on stuff. So check that out as well. If you want more great book recommendations beyond just my own Sword and Laser podcast, check out Reading Glasses with Mallory O'Mara and Bria Grant. They do a great job of like filling up your book list, and it's beyond just genre books. They do a lot of genre books because they're fans, but a lot of other kinds of novels, poetry, essays, biography. They go all over the place. If it's good to read, they talk about it. So check out podcasts. There's a lot of good stuff out there.
I agree. So those people,
if you haven't heard of podcasts, how are you listening?
They're
to
back.
It?
They're back, Tom. I heard they're back.
Yeah, they're back again.
I hear they're back. I recently listened to a show that everybody told me has been around forever and that I should have always been listening to, but I checked out a show called Darknet Diaries.
Oh, yeah.
And
that's a great one.
You need to listen specifically to if you're going to listen to any of them or give this thing a shot, the one to check is the episode about the Xbox hacking scene. It is one of the most fascinating, twisty, turny stories I've ever read. This is the kind of thing that'll make it into a full-blown eight-part Netflix documentary. It's that crazy. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. And it's very, very good. So if you're into, again, it's a little true crimey. So some people may not be into that, but Darknet Diaries.
Cyber
crime. It is cyber crime. Yeah. It's a lot of really great stuff. The host of this show, and I'm trying to find his name so I give him the proper credit because it's right here. Here it is. This is hosted by Jack Reisider. Sorry. He releases it fortnightly. It's really, really, really good. And it might kind of hook you in a way that'll make you forget about all the other stuff going on around here. Also, I would second the Raise the Dead comment, or the Justin Robert Young comment. He made a podcast called Raise the Dead, which is a lot like that too. It's a little, not true crimey, but true
history. It's all about the 1960 election between Kennedy and Nixon and all the ins and outs that made it happen. Stuff you've never thought about. You thought you knew the story of Kennedy and Nixon. You don't.
You have no idea. No idea. It blew my mind. And he's our friend and all, you know, it's easy for us to say, oh, check out a thing our friend did. Legitimately, it's really good. Friend or not. It's really something. So anyway, lots to choose from. Do you still use Pocket Casts primarily, by the way? Is that your main go-to for players, or do you use a different player when you're listening to what you want to listen to?
I am using Pocket Casts.
Okay,
yeah,
same.
That's my same one.
I would recommend that, not to get into podcast player wars. Google just did a big update. That might be nice. But Pocket Casts has just been amazing lately, and they have really good curated lists. And that's a great way to sort of find stuff. If you're like, ooh, Darknet Diaries, what else is like that? Ooh, here's more that are like that. They're very good at that sort of thing. So check that out. All right, Tom, there's one more thing on our list, and I don't even know what it is.
Oh, Duolingo. Good time to learn a language. Duolingo is easy to get into. It's free. You can pay for certain perks as part of it, but it's a mildly gamified way to learn a language. And a wonderful way to pass the time. You usually set like a daily goal where you do a certain amount of lessons, maybe three lessons. Mm-hmm. And so they have everything: Spanish, French, Japanese, Korean, Russian, Irish, Welsh. Like, you can think of a language, practically it's in there.
That's amazing. Other,
if you don't dig too deep into the Indian languages. But yeah, they've this is a great way to pass the time and improve yourself, not only because you will be learning a language that might be helpful in understanding a little more about the world, but also because learning a language is being shown to be a great preventative for certain late life degenerative diseases like Alzheimer's and others. So it's going to be good for you too.
Or do you, any particular, what language are you looking at to learn?
I'm right now, learning Korean.
Oh, very cool. Yeah.
I have previously used it to get brushed up on Japanese and French, before I went to those countries to kind of give me at least a passing chance of understanding a little more. And it was helpful. I didn't do it long enough to be able to be speaking the language, but they were certainly helpful. Some of the lessons are better than others. The Spanish language lesson is fantastic. They've got all the bells and whistles on there, and they do a great job with lots of explanatory text to kind of help you understand what's going on. Korean's like one of the ones they haven't touched in a while, so it's pretty bare bones. It doesn't have a lot of the bells and whistles. So kind of depends on which language you're using. Some of the European languages are a little more up to date in how advanced they are, but they all work well, and they all work. I'm learning a little bit all the time.
That's very cool. That's awesome. You'd think I'd know more Korean because I grew up with three Korean siblings, and I don't know, we got lazy and didn't do it.
Honey.
I just know the dirty words for my brother. That's it. I mean, and I learned those in junior high, so not a lot of learning has happened. Yeah, see, look at you. Let's go get kimchi. Everyone's happy. All right. Before we get out of here today, a quick email from a listener who wrote in about us talking about stuff in space. Everything is better in space. And this comes from Adams, who says, I really enjoyed this episode. One genre I didn't hear mentioned was the mob movie. What with so many movies and TV shows about organized crime, from Coppola to Scorsese, as well as The Sopranos and even The Wire, it seems a full-on genre to me, but I couldn't think of a space take on it. Sometimes in the background, particularly in Star Wars with the Hutts and Crimson Dawn and so forth, but still, these are generally views of organized crime from the outside, not from the inside like a classic mob movie. Just wondering if any further thoughts on space mob movies. 100%. I love the idea. Are you kidding?
I feel like I'm missing one, but yeah, nothing's popping right to my mind. Right.
I mean, the Hutts are a good example, but and there was a lot of Firefly had a lot of mob activity.
But that's the thing. Like, there's mob activity in space stories,
right?
But The Godfather is about the mafia.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. No, you're right.
And I can't think of any stories where the space mob is the story.
Yeah, and I'm all for this too. Like, I know there's something I'm not thinking of here.
Yeah,
there's got to be
edge of my consciousness.
I can't think of what it is, but I agree that there should be more, because one of my favorite subgenres of space stuff is space trucking delivery. Hey, did you know these guys are cheating the system and delivering too much iridium around the north rim of the Saturn moon, or you know, whatever. Like, this idea that you have organized crime but in space is fascinating. Like, that should be more. If it's not, if we can't think of anything, then this is a crime and there should be more of this.
So, yeah, I just keep thinking of other examples of like, there's a Cad Bane in the Clone Wars, but again, he's a gangster, but
I know
that's a good
it's comment. Very, very cool. I really like the idea a lot. So thank you for the concept there, Adams, and hopefully somebody somewhere will start making more of that content. If you'd like to be like him and send us an email, currentgeek@gmail.com is the email address. And as always, 801-471-0462 will get you some voicemails. We may be using that line for bigger, cooler stuff in the future, which is just a slight hint of upcoming cool things. So stick around for the rework, everybody. Okay, quick bit of business. We have a shift in when we were going to do our next film for the greatest films of all time. It was going to be today, but given everything that was going on, time got weird, and we needed to push it a week. So next week, which will be our last before the hiatus and our rework, we're going to be watching the very long but very interesting Blown Away with the Wind. Gone with the Wind.
So that's the modernization.
Yeah, there it is. So,
dude, Blown Away by the Wind.
If any of you have already invested your 4 hours in it, don't worry. We're coming. We'll be
here. They aren't wasted.
No.
Well, they're not wasted anyway, but we're definitely going to talk about it.
Yeah, we're definitely going to talk about it. So it'll be next week right here on the show. And I just got a file from Legal Geek. Let's see here. He says...
Ooh, breaking news.
Yeah, breaking news. Here's the Legal Geek segment for this show, which is, this week we update the Pirate Ship copyright case that was recently decided by the Supreme Court, and then look at how some teens defeated Instagram's tracking algorithms. Ooh, That's dark and dirty. So we'll find out what that's about here if you stick around and listen for Legal Geek right after this. All right, before we go, Tom Merritt, anything we want to talk about or mention before you go?
Yeah, I have a novel out. It's in the Pilot X series. I hesitate calling it a sequel because you could read them out of order. You don't need to read one first because time travel. It's called Trigger, T-R-G-I-O, T-R-I-G-O-R. Mm-hmm. I just misspelled my own book name. Yeah. T-R-I-G-O-R. I want to give credit to Diane Hernandez on Twitter. She wrote a great summary of this for DianeReviewsBooks.com. Pilot X is still feeling guilty for destroying three worlds when his ship hears the same weapon being tested again. Can Pilot X save the world this time? Can he find coffee and pie? And she says, perfect for Star Trek and Heinlein fans.
I like it. That's really cool that she wrote that up. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's really good.
All right, do check that out. That sounds really good to me. And on my side of things, I got a few projects brewing. My favorite right now, though, is a comic I create every week called Fred and Can. If you're interested in some really weird takes on everyday modern life, find out what Fred and his sentient can of expired cream corn think over at fredandcan.com. That comes out every Monday to a website or an email near you, or an RSS feed, I guess, however you want to get it. All right, that's going to do it for us. Support us at patreon.com/currentgeek if you are so inclined. We'd love that. It would really help us, too, as we work toward this rework. We're going to need your help to do it, and would love to have you on board. That's patreon.com/currentgeek. Currentgeek.com for everything else. For me, for Tom, for all of you, we'll see you next time.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we update you on the Supreme Court decision in the copyright case we covered in June involving pirate ships, and then review a story regarding how some teens have taken privacy law into their own hands when it comes to Instagram's tracking software. Although oral arguments and some court proceedings at the Supreme Court and other federal courts are on pause due to coronavirus, the justices are continuing to process opinions in previous cases, like the pirate ship case we discussed back in June. A Current Geek Reddit contributor, Velktron, noted this decision, which deals with that Redditor's home state of North Carolina and whether that state could be sued under the 1990 Copyright Remedy Clarification Act for alleged copyright infringement related to video footage of a sunken pirate ship off the coast of that state. The footage was specifically of the flagship of famed pirate Blackbeard. States are generally immune from such suits in federal court due to sovereign immunity under the 11th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. As expected when we covered this in June, the Supreme Court unanimously found that allowing states to be sued for copyright infringement is unconstitutional and directly contrary to the 11th Amendment. In this regard, the Constitution trumps the 1990 federal law trying to make an exception to the Constitution. Thus, the copyright holder will not be able to pursue North Carolina anymore for this alleged copyright infringement, and this part of the 1990 CRCA law is officially dead in the water. Our main story for this week is an interesting news story from last month, dealing with how a group of Maryland high schoolers developed a way to defeat or confuse Instagram's tracking mechanisms. The group created a way to share credentials so that multiple people were using multiple accounts, which they all accessed from multiple devices. This process cluttered the tracking data Instagram collects so much that the social media platform could no longer properly target the teens with ads and posts the platform thinks they were interested in. Essentially, the teens figured out how to hide in a group digitally. Of course, this method to maintain privacy online and circumvent trackers is a lot of work, and not something average users of social media platforms will bother to do. However, the fact that a small group of dedicated users can develop a methodology for defeating the effectiveness of such trackers means that options are likely available to be developed for the general public to also defeat such privacy invasions in the future, or at least have the right to opt in and opt out of such targeted advertising. If nothing else, it's another story illustrating the many ways individuals are tracked online and how sophisticated those privacy law invasions have become in the past decade. The bottom line is, with regard to pirate ships and states' rights, not even Blackbeard himself can overcome the U.S. Constitution. But the Constitution does not explicitly protect privacy law rights, which is why that rapidly developing legal field has struggled to come up with reasonable ways to protect consumers and individuals as our technology improves. especially as the world relies even more heavily on the internet during the current coronavirus pandemic. It's a legal field that becomes even more important each day, and we will continue to cover these interesting developments as they come in.
Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Yes, get more at frogpants.com.